Howdy guys, this is Shane. Welcome to the In the Blues Tone podcast. It's now April 4, 2018. This full podcast is now available on YouTube. You can also, of course, listen to it on iTunes. It comes out on iTunes a couple of days after the initial release on YouTube, as well as inthebluespodcast.com. We have a whole lot of really great topics and suggestions for topics today on the podcast, so it should be informative and entertaining. And if you have any suggestions for me to follow up with a particular topic, leave some comments below and I'm happily going to add it in if it's something that I know about. So the first thing I wanted to have a chat about before we get into the actual topics and content is the change of my video schedule. So I'm going to be releasing videos 12 hours earlier or later than where they're currently being released. I've been releasing videos kind of late-ish here, Melbourne, Sydney time in Australia for quite some time, and I thought I'd mix it up and try early morning. Why, you might ask? Why not? I just thought I'd give it a go and see what happens. I like to sort of keep an eye on my analytics, and there's a couple of times where I release videos early afternoon here, early morning sometimes here, and they seem to get more hits. So this is kind of like, I want to just see what happens. If it doesn't work, I'll go back to the regular video release, but I do know when I at least launch the videos here, my time really late in the evening. It's also really, really early in the United States as well, and that's where pretty much my core audience is. I do have audience from all over the world, of course, but that is a big part of the audience. So I want to just try mixing things up and maybe make the videos more available here in Australia as well as also being, you know, released overseas in Canada and the US at a reasonable time of the day. So it'll be mid-afternoon, somewhere like that. So just food for thought. I'll let you know as soon as this is going to get going. Probably in about three or four more videos, I'll start releasing them at the opposite side of the day just to see what happens. So now that the channel updates and news are out of the way, let's go ahead and get into our first topic. So this might come as a shock. I think we might be a little bit of an anomaly here living in Australia, but we have no Gibson distributorship anymore here. So that means whatever Gibsons are in shops are the last of what we've got. There's no way to actually get them from anyone locally. Now, there were a few companies over the years that have had that dealership, but they seem to have jumped ship as well. I think financially they might not be doing so well. Not Gibson. We all know they're not doing too well, but I have a feeling that the other companies that were bringing them in have stopped probably for a reason. And I don't know if they're going to get picked up. What I've noticed is nearly every time I've been into my local music shop here at Sky Music, I tend to find less and less of them on the wall. I always overhear calls about people wanting to get a Les Paul standard, and it's always the same thing. There's no distributorship, which means they can't get any new ones. And that's going to be the case for all of the music shops here in Australia, which is insane. So if you've been thinking about getting a Gibson, and this isn't to sell you a Gibson, you better hurry up. Because if they have any more financial issues, they might not be making guitars anymore. Let's hope that they still do. But at least in Australia, as of right now, what shops have is all they have. And it's funny because one of the importers for years and years had sort of the monopoly of Gibson guitars, and now that they don't have a part of that, it's going to be an interesting time to see if anyone actually steps up and trusts Gibson enough to lay down, you know, a couple of million dollars or however much they need to do to get that distributorship agreement. And the way Gibson are going, I'm not too sure too many companies will be jumping on board. It would seem like a huge risk. So just some news. This is really interesting. It kind of almost makes me wish I picked up one of the lefties I played recently. It was one of the classics and it had locking tuners and all that. It was a really great guitar. So yeah, please let me know your thoughts on this. If you live outside of Australia and you've already seen this type of thing happen, please also let me know in the comments as well. I think this is a little bit of a dark day for Gibson, at least in Australia, meaning that, you know, whatever shops have, that's all they got. And some of the shops here, I should also point out, that's all they sell is Gibson and Epiphone, as well as a few other amp brands and stuff, but that's their core market. So without a distributorship, it's going to be pretty quiet in some of these stores, which means probably more closures as well, which kind of sucks. So yeah, let me know your thoughts in the comments. One of the questions I see come up a lot on the channel, especially since I've been doing the Squire Contemporary Series videos, is how do the Squire Contemporary Series guitars compare to the Squire Classic Vibes / or Mexican Fenders? So we'll get into that. Now, in terms of tone subjective, what I like, you might not like, and what you like, I might not like. So tone is a subjective thing. None of them are right or wrong. So I'm going to put tone aside. If you like the sound of one of the guitars or you don't like the sound of one of the guitars, that's your ear and your preference. So that's out of the equation. But I'm going to talk about how I feel about the pickups in each of these guitars. I think they're great. So one of the strengths of both the Classic Vibe and Squire Contemporary series is the pickups they've chosen sound really, really good. Now, the Telecaster with the dual humbuckers sounds more like a Les Paul than it does Telecaster. So if you like that sort of fat, thick sort of tone, you're definitely going to dig the Squire Contemporary series stuff. If you're not after a humbucker guitar, I know they make a few others as well, you could go for the Squire Classic Vibe series stuff. You'll definitely dig the 60s Strat or maybe the 50s one as well, or the 50s Tally. They're both just great instruments. In terms of overall finish, I'm still going to give it to the Classic Vibes. I think they're really, really hard to beat. I know the new ones, the Contemporary series, have the painted headstocks and the fancy sort of paint, but the neck finish isn't as good. And in my personal opinion, the fret edges aren't finished as nicely as the Classic Vibes. I just feel like the Classic Vibe feels like a better instrument in my hand than the Contemporary series ones. But that's not to say the Contemporary series Tallies or Strats are bad, because they're not. I just feel like the attention to detail on the Classic Vibe stuff is just really hard to beat. I don't know if it'll ever be topped. I think it's a standout addition to their lineup. And if you've ever played one, or I know professionals who play Classic Vibes unmodded on stage in festivals. They're really, really great guitars. Really, really solid. Odds are we'll probably see some of these Contemporary series ones pop up on stage here and there from time to time. They're great guitars. So if you don't mind, you know, a little bit of a sharp fret edge, you could probably fix that up. They're still a really great guitar. In Australia, they're very comparable on price. And I know we get blown out in terms of cost here, but in other parts of the world, the price might fluctuate a little more than they are here. But at least in Australia, they're very, very similar price-wise. If I was to go buy another one, I'd probably still go for the Classic Vibe. So I hope that helps. This is all my subjective opinion. I really do like that red Tally with the dual humbuckers, though, I gotta say. But the thing I would do with it is probably give the fret edges a bit of a sand and I'd be good to go. That said though, overall, both great guitars. I'm still just gonna give the edge slightly to the Classic Vibes. One of the downsides of doing daily content is sometimes you make mistakes when you upload a video, whether it's a typo in an annotation or something like that, or typo in the header, I've been guilty of that, or just missing something on a guitar because you don't have much time with it. Sometimes when I borrow stuff, I only have it for a day and I've got to get it back. So I rush home, I film it, I take the thing back the next day and I'm good to go. Now, this one particular occasion I'm going to bring up where I kind of got something wrong was on the Super Viking Hagstrom electric guitar. It actually had push-pull pots and I didn't think to check all of the pots. I tried a couple of them and nothing happened, so I assumed the guitar didn't have push-pull pots. I do also go onto the website for information as well, but I just overlooked it. I didn't see that had push-pull pots. I think it's the lower two that were the ones that did the push-pull thing. So you can split the coils on that guitar. I did also receive a couple of emails and also a couple of messages on that video or comments on that video to say, hey, you missed, this is what it's got. So I appreciate that. I was spewing because it was such a great guitar. I really enjoyed filming it. One of the emails I copped was really nasty. Like, oh, your reviews are crap because you missed this one thing. I'm going to miss stuff from time to time, but if you approach me the right way about it, I'm more than happy to sort of do something like this, a follow-up video so people can know. Like I said, there's been times where I've had items for 40 minutes and that is it. And I try my best to get a quality video out and try to mention all the things to me that makes it feel or sound good or bad. Now that Hagstrom was great. I had a lot of positive things to say about it. I got a fly in here. So yeah, people who are just listening to the audio, that will make no sense. It was a really, really great guitar. The one thing I did miss was the push-pull pots. And I don't go into all the specs. I just like to go by how it feels in comparison to things that I'm familiar with and things that people who watch the channel might be familiar with as well. So all the technical specs, I don't think about guitars like that. I think about them, how they sound, how they feel. Is it inspiring to play? Is it easy to play? What kind of shape is a neck in reference to an Epiphone, a Gibson, a Strat, or a whatever? So that's how I go about my videos. I think that's more, because I play live a lot, one of the things for me is just how functional this guitar is. Not what's the fretboard radius, what, you know, detail is on. I don't get too carried away with the details and stuff. If it sounds good and feels good, it is good. And that's kind of my overall gist of my videos. If you want to see really hardcore specs, go to a website or go to another channel. For what I do personally, I try my best to create daily content and bring stuff out, well, almost daily content. I think I'm like 6 videos a week on the most part. So just sometimes I miss things. So thanks to everyone who let me know. And I thought I'd put a video out about it as part of this podcast because that's a really great guitar. And I'm almost thinking maybe I'll get it back just to do a quick push-pull pot comparison, just to see what it can do. But the Hagstrom Vikings are really nice guitars, and yeah, I liked it a lot. So just keep that in mind. If I miss something, just let me know in the comments. Cheers. So a couple of weeks back, I had a chance to test out my Marshall DSL 40CR amplifier at a festival. That's right, this time I didn't take the Bandit. I'm almost convinced now the Marshall DSL 40CR is my favorite valve amp in my collection. My favorite solid state amp is still a Bandit. I love my Blues Deluxe, but it generally means I have to, you know, take my pedal board with me, all that kind of stuff. The thing I love about the Marshall, and I'm completely converted, is the fact I don't need any pedals. The only pedal I'll run now is the wah pedal on the floor. I'll just put a clip-on tuner and I'm good to go. There was something extremely liberating about playing an amplifier where I didn't have to tap dance. It's actually inspired Rick to go out and try and find an amp that he can do exactly the same thing. Downsize his pedals and just focus on the playing. There's something to be said when you're not clicking a whole lot of stuff that makes it much easier to play. And this is what I kind of like and dislike about pedals. The good pedals, the ones I like personally, are the ones you can set and kind of forget about. I've got this amp seriously worked out now, and it plays really, really well live. I basically stay on 2 of the crunch channels. I don't even use the ultra gain channel or the clean channel at all. And I set up the channels very, very similarly to each other, just one with a little bit more volume and a little bit of gain. Luckily, where I play, I'm able to leave the master volumes all the way up on 10, and then the channel volumes up at about 1 o'clock, and that's where this amp really starts to shine. When I bought it, I thought I was going to really like the ultra gain setting, but I like the opposite channel of that on that ultra gain side. So it's kind of like one of the crunch channels, and it really, really plays itself. Having a wah pedal in there has been awesome as well, just to get that funky stuff that I love to play when I go play live. Now, one of the things I've started to use is the effects loop, and I've never used the effects loop on any of my amps until I got this. You might be asking, why did you use the effects loop all of a sudden? Well, I've got a delay pedal that I really like. It's the CTEK digital delay. And the cool thing is, this effects loop is basically, you can turn it on and off via the toggle switch, the foot switch that comes with the amplifier, which makes it really, really cool. So you can switch channels, you can set up your 2 favorite channels, switch channels, and then also turn the effects loop on and off. So I've got delay pedal sitting on top of my amp. It's good to go whenever I need it. And then I've also got the ability to change from one less gain channel to a higher gain channel at a click of a switch. And that essentially takes care of what would normally be my pedal board with two different overdrives, for example. So that's kind of essentially how I'm using my rig. I'll put up a little clip from the gig within this podcast as well, so you can check out how it sounds. And I'm a huge fan. I just love being able to turn this amp up and get a really usable sound. Now, the one thing about it I should point out is 20 watt mode doesn't sound anywhere near as good as 40 watt mode. The guts and that low end growl and punch that the 40, it's like two different amps. It's almost like comparing a Princeton to a Marshall DSL 40. That's essentially the difference in the tone. Although you're going to get a whole lot of extra gain, but I mean, just in sheer output oomph, it's almost like comparing it to a Blues Junior, basically, I should have said, and the Marshall DSL 40. That's kind of the difference. Blues Juniors are great sounding amps, but they don't have anywhere near the same amount of growl, punch, or power as the Marshall. So it's basically, you get those two options. Now, I'm not saying it devoiced like a Blues Junior. What I'm saying is just the sheer difference in output oomph. It's very, very different, and audibly just so much louder on 40 watts also. We'll be right back. In terms of the speaker that's in this amp, I love it. I'm not going to change it. I'm going to just leave it as it is. The more I play it, the more I'm enjoying it. And it's been reliable. I haven't had any problems. I've probably used it live about 5 or 6 times now. And I'm going to be playing a gig on the 13th here in Melbourne. I'm going to try this on 20 watt mode, or I'm probably just going to bring the Studio Pro 112. I'm not too sure yet. It'll be one or the other. It's a low volume gig, but I think 20 watt mode on this should be fine. And that will also allow me not to have my pedal board on the ground. I can essentially just use my wah pedal and leave a delay in the effects loop, and I'm done. Now, in terms of the 40 watt CR versus the 20 watt amp, this is in terms of the combos, I definitely would take the 40. I see this question come up a lot as well. What are the main differences? All right, so you can actually switch the 40 down to 20 watts, so you have that ability. The 40 comes with a much better speaker. The cabinet size is bigger, which means you're gonna get a larger sound. And those are the things to me that make the difference in the tone. The 20 watt amp would sound much better if they used this V-Type Celestion speaker in that, but they chose to use a 7080. I'm not a huge fan of those speakers. Some people really like them, but I just pretty much think they're the most lackluster speaker choice any amp company can make, unless you're Fender, using those Eminence Fender speakers. Terrible. And I'm a huge Fender fan, as I've said many times. Anytime I buy a Fender amp, I swap the speaker. The great thing about this 40 watt Marshall is I don't feel the need to swap the speaker out, which is great. And you also get those couple of extra channels as well. Now, thank you to everyone who commented on my actual video saying you can get a 4-button foot switch, so you can swap between all the channels, or 5-button foot switch, but it allows you to go between all of the actual channels on the amp. So I might hunt one of them down at one point in time if I need to. But so far, just using my volume control to, you know, clean up the amp and then turning it up, it's been fantastic. It's very, very liberating. It basically allows me to focus more on what's going on around me, and it pushes me to play more as opposed to trying to stack things and sort of click on things just to see what happens. So in a live situation, as of right now, my favorite amp by a country mile, as they say, is the Marshall DSL-40CR. I freaking love it. So this next topic kind of piggybacks on top of the topic I just spoke about regarding my Marshall, and that's using the effects loop. Now, like I mentioned earlier, this is something that I've never really spent a whole lot of time using. It pretty much just came down to me being more lazy than anything and kind of liking the sound I was getting going into the front end. But using a delay pedal in the effects loop has been magnificent. I actually had comments on my delay tone, which is something that I don't get very often. I usually get a lot of comments on my drive sound. People like my tone and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, someone said, I think it was Rick, he said to me, man, that delay tone sounds very studio. Having it in the effects loop is a whole different world. And I was like, you know what? I think you're right. It definitely does something different to the sound. I did notice it drops the volume fractionally, but it's nothing you can't compensate by just walking over and turning up. So that aside, it feels really good to play. And this is kind of bringing me to the next point, is I might actually try using a few other pedals in the effects loop and maybe do a video shootout between how they sound in the effects loop of an amplifier as opposed to going straight into the front. Now, there's no right or wrong with any of this stuff. Some people prefer to use it straight into the front end. Some people don't have effects loops on their amps, and that's their only option, and they like the sound of that, and that's fine. That was like me for years. I just thought everything going into the front works for me, and it's less cables and less fiddling around, and that's what I'm all about. Just plonk something down and you're good to go. But lately, being that this particular amp that I've got is really, really plug and play, and if the only other pedal I'm going to take to a gig is a delay pedal, I can sit on the amp, plug it into the effects loop, and I'm good to go. So give it a go, see what you think. Let me know in the comments if you're an effects loop kind of guy when it comes to delays or modulations, or whether you go straight into the front end. And can you hear a difference? We'll follow that up with another video in the future. Up next, we're going to have a chat about Dan Electro electric guitars and why all the YouTubers are using them. That's the most frequently asked question I see on all of the videos for Dan Electro guitars and pedals. So let me tell you what Dan Electro do extremely well. They know that by sending us guitars or pedals, it's an extremely cheap way for them to advertise their products. And in turn, it's great for us because we can use guitars on our channels. Now, for me personally, I was blown away that Dan Electro actually wanted to send me some lefties. I always love testing left-handed guitars. I didn't charge them for my videos or anything like that. I was literally like, they said, what guitars would you like in left-handed? and I picked two in the colors that I wanted, and that's what they sent out. So it was really, really nice of them to do that. So they're smart enough to know that the easiest way to get their name out into the world of, you know, pedals and guitars is to give them to the YouTubers who have, you know, tens or hundreds of thousands of subscribers. So it's a good thing for them and a cheap way for them to get out into, you know, everyone's lounge rooms or phones or whatever, however you want to say it, or computer screens. So for them, it works really well. And for me personally, being a left-hander, I'm not going to decline testing out a left-handed guitar. I have the largest archive, I think, of left-handed guitars in the world on my channel now. And that's really, really cool. So for me, having some extra guitars I can use on the channel in future videos as well is always a good thing. It keeps the, you know, the content a little more fresh and all that kind of stuff as well. I can chop and change between guitars. This takes me into the next question I see all the time is, how good are the quality of these Dan Electro guitars, especially the 84, in comparison to, say, a Classic Vibe or even a Mexican Standard Strat? I would go so far to say that they're as good as a Mexican Standard Strat in terms of quality, sound quality. The switches feel good, the pots are good. You shouldn't really need to mod this guitar. Like I said in my video review of that guitar, the fret edges on one side were a little sharp, but nothing too over the top. That said, it's a really great guitar to play. Like, if you're familiar with a Strat or a Mexican Standard Strat, it's gonna feel pretty much the same as that. And I think that's what they're going for. At least price-wise in the US, they're very, very comparable to the Fender Mexican stuff. So that's a really cool thing. And by the way, for those who don't know where these new guitars are made, Dan Electro moved their manufacturing of these guitars to Korea. So the quality control is awesome. I would also go so far to say is it's as good as my PRS SE, just in terms of the visual thing. I think the finish is great, you know, all that kind of stuff. I think the PRS would have the edge just based on the fret edges and a couple of the finer details, but you're paying a whole lot more, at least here in Australia anyway. It's different all over the world, so keep that in mind. My perspective is probably a little bit different when it comes to price, but in terms of the Dan Electro 84, is it as good as the Mexican Standard stuff? Absolutely. If you like those guitars and you're happy with them, I think the tones and the feel of these are very, very similar. They're not an identical guitar in terms of feel, but they're very, very close. There's something really easy to play about the Dan Electro, and it's a guitar that I've been using more and more out live, and I'll have some live clips of that coming up. Now, the interesting thing is the 64. The build quality and the finish on the 64 is as good as my Japanese Tokai guitar. Just visually, it's a beautiful guitar. The fret edges are fine. They're kind of like, I think they're kind of underneath like the side of the fretboard a little bit. They've kind of got them rounded down. But man, the gloss, the finish just looks stunning. The pickup, I love the dual humbucker pickup in the 64. I think it's one of my favorite humbucker pickups. The P90 is okay. It's maybe not the best P90 I've ever played. It's by no means the worst either, but it's good. I think it's one small maybe critique is the neck pickup isn't the best P90 I've ever heard, but you know, easy fixed if you need to change that or if you don't like it. I think it's still usable, absolutely, and that video should be coming up pretty soon. I'll talk a little bit about that on that video too. So overall, the quality is extremely good. I would put it above the Classic Vibe stuff slightly, somewhere around the Mexican Standard or the Mexican Special guitars. They're really nice guitars. So if you get a chance to check them out. All right, up next, we're gonna have a chat about the PRS Silver Sky, my thoughts about it. Now, at the time the first video from PRS dropped, I had basically another video scheduled that I never ended up releasing. I kind of just didn't release it because I thought there's enough people doing those sort of videos. And this is just, I thought I'd let it kind of cool for a few weeks and then get into it. With a little bit of hindsight in there, as opposed to just kind of coming off like a fanboy. Now, I'm no PRS fanboy. I've got a PRS SE, but you got to look at it like this from a company's perspective. I think even if John had gone to Gibson and they said, "Hey, we want to make you whatever guitar you like," and he said, "I want a Strat," they would have built him a Strat, right? It only makes sense that the people making the guitars are going to try and accommodate a big-named artist, whether it was him or whoever. So he's probably one of the most influential current guitar players of now, right? Even though he's not really releasing a whole lot of great guitar stuff right now, some of his catalog has some really great playing in it. And I think companies know it's a license to pretty much print money. Had John not have gone to PRS, would PRS have made a Strat-style guitar? Probably not. Now, they do have a couple that are, you know, the three single coil pickups and all that kind of stuff, but shape-wise, they're extremely different. This particular one's about as close to a Strat as you're going to get, with some different appointments on the design. Obviously, the headstock, the neck, the fretboard. There's things on it that are clearly different visually, but it, you know, for all intents and purposes, it's a Strat with a different neck. You know, would PRS have done that had John not have gone to them? I think the answer is no. I'm sure Paul Reed Smith might have actually thought twice about it, because I don't know if he would have or not, actually. Who knows? He's a bit of an entrepreneur with stuff, so he might have just thought, you know what, this is a good chance for me to work with a really great guitarist, and I'll make whatever he says, but I want to have some input into the final design. And like I said, if John had gone to someone else, they would have made pretty much the same type of guitar with some appointments from the companies, you know, regular headstocks and all that kind of stuff, just to keep that identity there as well. So it's an interesting move to see another Strat copy come out. And I know the pickups are all a little bit different, all that kind of stuff as well. Now, at least visually, in terms of the PRS Silver Sky, it is quite a little bit more different to a regular Strat than something like a Nash guitar or an LSL or even a Sur, in terms of its overall vibe. Now, those guitars look much, much more like a Strat or a Relic Strat or Tele than the Silver Sky does. At least the Silver Sky hasn't got the same old headstock you see, just with a different angle on one bit, you know. So, at least to my mind, I think visually, it's different enough that it's going to stand out. If you see it next to a Strat, it's going to look like a Strat to the untrained eye. But for those who know guitars, you'll go, hey, check it out. There's something very, very different about this. Now, that's not to say that I think these are going to sell like hotcakes. I don't know how well they're going to sell. It'll be interesting to see if, you know, once the verdict is in, so to speak, with everybody in the YouTube community and all that kind of stuff, what people actually think of these. There's a lot more comparison videos going up between the Silver Sky and the old John Mayer Strat and all that kind of stuff as well. So if you want to hear the differences, there's plenty of those videos. But yeah, I'm definitely going to hold off judgment until I get to see one in person and get to hear it and see if it's something that, you know, is a little bit different to a Strat or whether it's just a straight up Strat copy. Now, the way they went about some of their videos rubbed people the wrong way, because, you know, all this 2 years of development for a guitar that is essentially a Strat seems ridiculous. But, you know, I think at least some of these builders want to get stuff right. And if you've got someone who's very, very fussy as the artist trying to get something that they're going to play out of the company that's building the guitar, it's going to take more time than I think people realize. Prototypes and that can sometimes take a while to finish and try to get it up to a point where only small modifications need to be made. But even that's really time consuming as well. So while the overall shape isn't anything new, I'd still want to get my hands on one of these just to see how they feel and sound. Thanks for watching and listening. My name's Shane. This has been the In The Blues podcast for the 4th of April, 2018. This year is flying by, man. It is crazy. And for those watching, I'm going to try growing my beard again. I wasn't going to do it, but I'm definitely going to try it again now. So I'm going to look like a caveman coming up this year. That's my goal, just to try it once. Anyway, guys, thanks so much. If you have any suggestions for future videos or sections for a future podcast, please let me know. I might have a guest on one pretty soon too. I'm going to have a chat to Nick in the States as well. Last year, we were talking about doing a combined podcast. Let me know your thoughts about that as well. We may actually just do them live also on YouTube. So that's something that's in the works right now. And yeah, I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Don't forget to like, subscribe, click the bell for future updates. And like I said at the start, you can find this on iTunes or at inthebluespodcast.com. You can listen for free there. Don't forget to check out all the links in the description. And I will catch you on the next one. Take it easy. See ya.